If you replace, so let's use this syntax, if you replace lambda by some function called the cusp anomalous dimension, then the divergences are perfectly well captured by this QED computation, and then this object is defined sometimes with some exponential just for convenience as what is called the remainder function. And this remainder function is now a finite quantity. So this guy is finite because we already removed the infrared divergences. Because it's finite and well-defined and so on, it only depends on the cusps, on the cross ratios made out of the cusps of the polygon. But for 4 and 5 points, there are no cross ratios, so this remainder must be 1. And therefore, for 4 and 5 points, we can extract the value of this Wilson loop at any value of the coupling based, if we know the cusp anomalous dimension. So for n equal 4 and 5, computing the scattering amplitudes is equivalent to computing this single function f of lambda. Now, this function is computing the integrability using the following way. So this function f of lambda, which arises first as some property related to the divergences of some Wilson loop, first you relate it, and I'm going only to be very schematic. By the way, can you tell me when, say, 12 minutes are passed since the beginning of the talk? Because I really don't want to spend more than 12, 15 minutes on this. So we have some function which is associated to the divergences of this, and we relate this function to the anomalous dimensions of operators, of single trace operators called twist two operators, where you have z, some scalar of n equals 4. This is some scalar. Then you have many derivatives, s, and then another scalar, where these derivatives are light cone derivative, and they are light cone precisely related to the fact that we are studying here some light edges. So we can think of these edges as being 1 in x plus, 1 in x minus. Then this will be, for example, v plus. This anomalous dimension, when s is very, very large, when the spin is very large, so when this operator becomes roughly a delocalized operator along some light-like direction, according to our intuition, is given diverges with logarithm of the spin, and the coefficient of this divergence is precisely f of lambda. So this is what we want to compute. So how do we compute this guy? First, we do it in a very indirect way. Instead of studying two z's and many derivatives, first we study many z's and just two derivatives. Let's do exactly the opposite of what we want. Then we know that we can think of this, just as for our own convenience, as thinking of these derivatives as some particles with some momenta p1 and p2. It is just our convenience, and by this I mean in the sense that the eigenvectors are linear superpositions in Fourier with momenta p1 and p2, exactly like Collier wrote, some wave function of the particles. And because this is a trace, this is like a closed chain. So these momenta, pi, are quantized because we are in a closed system. And they are quantized by some algebraic, or in fact polynomial in the right variable, by some algebraic equations, like e to the ip equal to 1 for a free particle in a circle, but some slightly more complicated. So, as a second step, so this can be done at any coupling using integrability. And here I'm going, there is a huge amount of things I could tell you about it, but this is the physical picture. We have some excitations. They scatter with each other. The scattering can be studied exactly. It's just one-dimensional. There are integrability techniques. We can compute this energy, this anomalous dimension at any coupling. Then we consider the number of z's to be very large, the number of derivatives to be very large, even larger than the number of z's, and then we notice that the energy is equal to log s times some function of lambda plus some stuff here, which is subleading. And the length, turns out, the length only enters here in the subleading terms. So you can take L to be, instead of 2, to take L to be 100 or so. Then you can compute this F of lambda. You can take S to be 2 millions. You compute F of lambda. And because of this universality that subleading terms only appear here, you can get this f of lambda from these algebraic equations. But you need to solve these algebraic equations. So there are some algebraic equations here with a number of variables, which is equal to s going to infinity. So these equations transform into some integral equations, right? It's the typical thing in physics. When you have many variables and you take the limit, you always get some integrals. And in this case, you get some integral equation for the densities of the momenta. And these integral equations are our starting point for this session. The goal is to solve these integral equations in the computer. Okay? So let's please have Mathematica on the screen, and let's go to Mathematica. So I have less than 15 minutes. So I used less than 15 minutes, yeah? Cool. So any question about this part? So this is just the general background. So the way I motivate solving some differential equation. So now let's go to Mathematica. Can I have Mathematica in the screen? Can I have the computer in the screen? Okay, cool. So let's start. So the first thing we do, as usual, we go to style sheet and we put some reasonable style sheet so that our highs don't hurt. And now we have some nice style sheet. We can create a title. Again, I will use the shortcut, command 1. And I write here, cusp anomalous dimension. Now we want to know what integral equations give rise to these integral equations. So with the last version of Mathematica, we can try, for example, if you want to know these integral equations, we can ask Wolfram Alpha, for example. Maybe Wolfram Alpha knows what are these integral equations. So we ask how to compute, say, cusp dimension. And Mathematica will try to connect to Wolfram Alpha. Connecting to Wolfram Alpha, she's searching through some databases, and it doesn't work. But I thought it used to work. Ah, anomalous. Maybe I forgot anomalous. Connecting. Good. It did work. So these are the integral equations that we must solve. So we must find a solution to this integral equation. So let's have a look at them with some pointers so that we can understand what do we have to solve. So here is the cusp anomalous dimension. Gamma of the coupling is equal to 16 g squared. Here is the coupling. No, this is not the cusp anomalous dimension. This is the total dimension, what I call delta here in the blackboard. It's equal to a function of the coupling times logarithm of m. M probably is this spin. So this is the function we want. And it's given by 16 g squared times a function evaluated at 0. And this function is what solves this integral equation. So we first solve and find this function, then we plug the argument equal to 0, and we read the anomalous dimension. Okay, good. So what do we have to solve? Let's have a look at it. This looks a bit scary. So we have here some function k. Some function k here. And the same function k appearing here. So k is at the same time a kernel and a source for these equations. Maybe I should use the mouse. It's easier to see. Is the mouse easier to see? So I have here a source and a kernel. This kernel here is a sum of three kernels, k0, k1, and kd. k0 is just a product of two Bessel functions. k1 is another product of two Bessel functions. And kd is you multiply two Bessel functions and you integrate them with some simple convolution kernel. Okay, so imagine we compute this kernel here. Okay, so we compute this kernel. Then we get some expression for this k. It turns out that k starts, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's okay, let me write. So we have an equation of the following form. Sigma of t is equal, let me be schematic, k of t and 0, plus k of t and t prime times sigma of t prime integral dt prime. not really. you know, very important, there is a G square here. So the claim is that this guy starts, we will see, but it starts at order one. So this guy is A plus B G square plus C G to the four plus tac tac tac. This one here. So to leading order, sigma of T is just equal to A to leading order. So sigma T, you just ignore this part. Then sigma is given by this leading order. You plug it here, and you read the next to leading order, computing this integral of this kernel to the leading order times this correction. Because there is this G square. So you read, you take A from here, you take A from here, and you get the sub-leading order, which is the one with G square. So at the next order, we have, from this kernel, we have B plus the integral of A times A, etc. So please tell me whether this is clear. Is it clear? So this is of order one, this is of order one to leading order. There is a G squared here, so I have this contribution. And this guy, it has an explicit term of order to G squared, so it comes immediately there. And so on. So I iterate. Then I know what is this sigma to subleading order. So let me, to make sure everyone understands, this is at order G squared. So there is A, which is the leading one, plus, and this is sigma, plus dot, dot, dot. Now I know sigma, I plug it again, I get this next one, then I plug again, I get the next one, and so on. Okay? Is it clear? Good. So let's try to implement this. So up to which order would you like to compute this Kaspar-Moss dimension? 10? Let's have 10. Up to 10 loops. Not 10 loops, it's G squared, up to 5 loops, say. So maximum will be this. So now let's start. Let's first think about some useful integrals. Because you see that in this kernel, what appears here, we have here t over e to the t minus 1. So it turns out that one useful integral to know is what is the following integral. Integrate t to the n over exponential of t minus 1. You might have noticed that this e is not the usual e. So the e from exponential of x, you can enter scape, e, e, scape, and this does this funny e. Okay? So this funny e is the Knepper number. Or it's called Knepper, yeah? Something like that. And then you integrate this from t from 0 to infinity. This is the integration range that appears there. And if you compute this, it gives some conditional expression. So if the real part of n is bigger than 0, you get this. Otherwise, it doesn't converge. So we can tell, assuming, because indeed, we will want always n slash scape in, it's actually an integer, and it's positive. We want positive integers, integrate this. And then this gives n factorial times zeta function of 1 plus n. Okay? So this is an integral that gives zeta functions, and it will be a new, these zeta functions will appear in the Kaspar-Moss dimension. Okay, next thing we should know is about Bessel functions. Because Bessel functions appear here in the kernel. So how do we enter this Bessel function, J1 and J0? So let's try Bessel, J, it must be this one. And then it asks for two arguments. If you just put X, there is still this red thing. Can you see? Ah, you should have complained. It's too small, no? It was too small, no? Could you read before? So you see that there is this symbol here, complaining that one argument is not enough, and indeed this wants two arguments, okay? And why two arguments? One argument is this index here, J1 or J0, and the other argument is T or T prime. So the first argument, 1, the second argument, X. Now you might be a bit uncertain. Could it be that I did a mistake and it was JX, 1? Sometimes it's useful to ask for what's the traditional form. And it's J1x, so yeah, it should be like this, right? So mathematical, more or less, the form that you would normally see in papers. So sometimes when you enter some hypergeometric function or some Bessel function, I mean, you can, of course, go to help. This is the proper way of doing it. But if you do traditional form, you will find exactly the same expression as in the paper, and it's enough. Okay, good. So we know how to enter Bessel functions. Let's be extremely picky, because this is an opportunity to teach you a bit more about this notation package. Imagine we want to use this t prime. It's kind of stupid. We could use some other variable. But we want to use t prime. So for that, let's learn a bit about notation. So we can call the notation package of Mathematica. And we need to use this funny symbol at the very end. And we call notation, and now this palette here appeared in the upper right corner. And we can call one of these boxes and say that when you see TP, TP is to be understood as being equivalent to T prime. Okay? And we can say that TP, T with two primes is to be understood as this. So before running this, let me show you the difference. So if I have t prime of x, it was this. It's the derivative of this function. Okay? For example, I could say t become the function x squared, for example. Let t become the function x squared. Now I have derivative of x squared, I get 2x. Okay? So this was before running the notation. Now I run the notation. Sorry, I did not need to run again. I run the notation. Now if I run t prime of x, t prime now is a symbol. It's a block by itself. So now it is not the derivative of x. It is just a t prime of x. And in fact, if you ask Mathematica, how do you see this? For Mathematica, this is tp of x. You see? It is not t prime of x. It's tp of x. Good. So now we can use primes. We're almost there. But okay, at some point we really need to insert the so-called integral equation, which is the Beiser-Tiedenstahl-Dacher equation. So let's insert the BES kernels. So we have three kernels to insert, K0, K1, and the last one. Let's start by K0. So let's see K0. So let's copy this image back here so that we have it close to our eyes. So this is K0. And you see that K0 is a function of T and T prime. But in fact, what we will need is always the argument 2GT to GT prime. So let me immediately put 2GT times Bessel J1 of 2GT. You see, I'm copying this line here. I'm copying this part. 2GT times Bessel J1, 0, 2G. Now I can use this T prime. And now I subtract the same thing with T and T prime exchange. So I put some primes and I remove some primes. What have I done? Put some prime, remove some prime. And all this is divided by, again, let me put immediately 2GT square minus 2GT prime square. So this is this kernel K0. It also has a different representation as the sum of Bessel functions, which probably is actually faster for what I'm going to do next. But for our purpose, this is enough. Okay, so we have this. Actually, Mathematica decided to put this stuff. I prefer it to be... I cannot. It's too small. Can you still read if I go to 125? Is it still readable? Or not so much? It's either still readable or not. Is it still okay? Okay, so I think now I can fit it here, which is nice. Okay, so this is one kernel. Let's define the other one, K1. What was K1? Let's try. It's even harder to find the difference. Just this T prime and T are exchanged. So let's put the prime here and remove the prime here. Done. What about KD? KD is an integral. So let's define small KD to be the integrand of this integral. 8G squared times K1. Wait, but now here the argument is T, but it doesn't matter because we will always ask for argument 2GT. So it's the same story. This T is actually 2GT. This T prime is actually 2GT prime. Okay, why didn't they immediately write this with proper definitions? I have no idea. But okay, let's K1. Now K1 is a function of T and T prime. Of course, I could have put arguments here, but I decided not to. So that's not a problem. We replace T prime by an integration variable, T prime prime, in K1. This is multiplied by T prime prime over escape EE exponential of T prime prime minus 1, and then K0, where the first variable, which was t, is now t prime prime. Okay, this sounds good. Let's try. We run it. And some Bessel functions we can see in traditional form. okay, this looks reasonable. It looks what we need. This is indeed the integrand. Sorry? The integration variable is here, t prime prime. So t and t prime are fixed, and t prime prime is integrated over. Okay, so we have the integrand. Now, before we start to integrate it to get really the kernels, there's something that we want to do. We are in perturbation theory, so we want to expand these kernels. And something, so the function to expand is series. So if you have series 1 over n minus x, x, comma 0, comma 10, it will expand around 0 up to order 10, and it gives this annoying order 11. So I don't know, this is one of those cases where you think there ought to be an option for shutting down this order 11. Is Jake around? Is there an option to remove this order? No? No, this is really strange. Okay. We can normal this, and if we normal, we remove it. Another option, for example, another option, something that also removes automatically is if you collect. If you ask to collect in powers of x, it automatically removes. So let's define our own function, our own series, which is a function which will series expand something to order n, and I will soon add another slot. And what does it do? Well, it picks this x, it expands g around 0 up to order n, okay, and it collects in g, so this removes the order, this order symbol, which we don't want to work with, we want to work with polynomials. And then there's something nice in collect. You can have, for example, collect, let me try, so say, for example, 1 plus x plus... Let me see. Okay, let's see immediately here. So let's define this, and now let's apply this series, for example, to this one that we have to integrate, to this KD. Let's expand this KD to the maximum power, this max, which was 10. So if you expand, you get this. And you see the coefficient of g to the 4 is this. The coefficient of g to the 6 is this. The coefficient of g to the 8 is this. And we could say that each coefficient, we want to do something to it. For example, we could say factor this. And then to each coefficient, you would automatically factor, which is something useful for what we are going to do next. But we might decide to do different things to each coefficient at different times. So let's add that as a function, as an option of our series. We can do something to this f, and if we say nothing, we factor. Remember, this dot, this is optional. If I don't tell her anything, it will just factor. So let's clear all series. And now when I expand, automatically she factors unless I tell her. So if I want to do nothing, I should do here, identity. This is the function which does nothing. And then it's the same as before, right? But the one without anything now factors. If instead of factor I want to expand, I put here expand. Now it expands each one. Okay. Or I could decide, for example, to simplify. And it would simplify each one. Okay, good. So we have this nice function now. Okay, and now here comes the claim that we will verify explicitly, which is that all integrals that will appear, all integrals that will ever appear, will be these ones. No other integral will appear. Just this integral will appear. If this is true, instead of integrating, we can just implement a replacement rule, which is infinitely faster. You can just say, whenever you find this over this, replace by zeta function. Okay? And if at the end of the day we have some t prime prime, it's because what we were doing was just wrong. It was not true that only this pattern was appearing. Okay? So we can always check whether this is bullshit, what I'm going to say. So let's do a function that integrates. A function that integrates, so let's create a new section, our integrator. A function that integrates something is the following. You pick that something, and it's useful to massage it a bit sometimes, so let's always for safety, let's wrap it some expand and some factor, but you can probably remove it. And then if you find some t prime prime to some power n over exponential of t prime prime minus 1, replace this by what we saw above, which was n factorial zeta function of n plus 1. So do this. Okay? So let's see. So if we have t prime prime square over exponential of t prime prime minus 1 times some other function of t, for example, times t square. And now we integrate. She knows it's the integration with respect to t prime and gives this, which is the correct integration. Now, if we do this, now we put, for example, integration of the same thing but without the square, doesn't work. Why? Sorry? Huh? Good. So, how to fix this? No. Simplify first, we'll do nothing. So, what is Mathematica doing? She's saying, if you find a pattern where you have this, but what is this? Let's see what is this for Mathematica. For Mathematica, this is the following. Let's see how Mathematica sees this. Full form, for example. She sees this. If you see power of t prime prime and then something, replaced by this. But if you have just t prime prime, and you have full form, this is not power of t prime prime comma 1. It is just not of that form. So what you do is you put a small dot at the end. And this means, in particular, the neutral element with respect to this operation. The neutral element with respect to power is 1. The neutral element with respect to plus is 0, and so on. And now it also works. Now if I replace this, it also replaces. Okay? So let me put here some comments. Note the slash dot. And if you go to documentation center, slash dot will tell that this is default. It gives the default value. Okay? Default of, or whatever. You can go to the documentation center. But basically it's some power in particular 1. So when you, and then it works. Okay, good. So we have our integrator. It integrates very well. And, by the way, we have still one kernel that we didn't define, missing kernel, which was KD. So what is KD? KD is, you pick your KD, your integrand, you expand it, series of this, up to order max, you get this, and you integrate, and you get this. Now it's a function of t and t prime, exactly as it should be. Okay? So this is our KD. We work only up to order max, so we can very well replace, we can very well have this to be our KD. And then the full kernel was what? It was k0 plus k1 plus KD. And since we work only up to order max, we can very well put here series max. And let's have this kernel. Let's put some nice Gothic Go K to be nicer. Of T and T prime to be equal to this. So this is the kernel. You see, to leading order, it's just 1/2. It doesn't even depend on T and T prime. Then there is the G squared term, which does depend on T and T prime. Then the G to the 4 term, which does depend on T and T prime, and so on. Okay? Let's look again at this image to be sure that we are doing what we should be doing. Let's again copy this image to the very bottom. So indeed, k should be k0 plus k1 plus kd. Kd was this integral. So we did everything properly. Okay? And that's it. So we can ask to see what is this k. And it's something like this. It's funny. Traditional form, you see, converts the t prime, doesn't like this t prime. Then I don't like the traditional form. Okay. Good. So perfect. This is the kernel. So you see, this 1/2 is exactly this A. So this A is 1/2. So 1/2 is the leading order. So just like, let's see. So A is 1/2. 1/2 is the leading order. So this sigma of 0 is just 1/2. So it's 8 G squared. It's indeed the cusp anomalous dimension at one loop. It's 8 G squared, for those who know by heart. Okay? So we seem to be on the right track. Okay, now we have this kernel. I think we did the hardest part. So now we just implement the iterations. Okay, so we implement the iterations. Let's clear all this function sigma. And then we start sigma at the first iteration as a function of t. Okay, let me copy this again. It is just this stuff here. It's just t over e to the t minus 1 times this Gothic kernel of 2gt, 0. And since we are in the first iteration, it's a bit stupid to expand it. We can just make series and expand it to order 0. Sorry? You are absolutely right. We did. Thanks. Good. Yeah, I was complaining about this GD, and then I was inserting it back. Very good. So indeed, this is sigma 0, sigma at order 0. And now sigma at some other higher iteration order as function of t. Sorry, I forgot underscore here. As function of t is the following. So what do we want to do? We want first to memorize it, sigma n of t. If you don't understand this part, I will explain in 1 minute. And we want to do the following. We want to do this iteration here. So there is t over e to the t minus 1. Then there is the kernel that we can expand now to one higher order because we are in the next order of perturbation theory. So g of t 0 now to order 2n. So if n is 1 up to order 2, if n is 2 up to order 4, and so on, because it's an expansion in even powers of g. Okay, we expand this one. And then minus 4 times the integral of what? Of g square. Let's the integral of series, put g square, this kernel of t and t prime. Sigma at the previous iteration step, n minus 1 and t prime. Let me close this. Sigma at the next iteration step and t prime. Prime, actually, because integrations are always respect t prime prime, our integrator. To order, we expand to order 2n, and we integrate. So we don't need this so many brackets, we can use this. Is this clear? Yeah? So it doesn't work. But let's see why it doesn't work. Sigma 0t, perfect. Sigma 1t, perfect. To except that k, she doesn't know what is k. It's Gothic k. Go k. So sigma of 0t, sigma 1t, perfect. Sigma of 2nt doesn't work. Right, thus. Sigma of 3nt doesn't work. Okay, it works. I'm a bit suspicious. I suspect I did a mistake. Okay, good. Yeah, it works. Why it shouldn't work? I was thinking... let me see. Why it shouldn't work? No, something that we'll complain is the following. This I know for sure. If you ask what is sigma 1 of t, it gives this. It works perfectly. Now, what is sigma 1 of y? Okay, just replace t by y. But what is sigma 1 of t prime prime? Okay, I really give up. Okay, awesome. It's working. Yesterday it was not working. The problem yesterday was the following. She was replacing t prime prime here. But then there was a kernel. This t prime prime was part of the integration. And then she was screwing up everything. Okay. If you're clear and then run first this one, okay, it's messing with me. I don't know. Okay, forget this subtlety. So, is everyone happy? So let me just remind you what this stuff is. I say that sigma of nt, when it only evaluates after I tell what is n and t. But when it evaluates, what does it do? It computes what is on the right-hand side. But what's on the right-hand side? Is something that sets sigma of n and t to be this. So sigma is memorized. So when I ask, what is sigma? Now she will tell me, sigma of 1 and t is this, sigma of 0 and t is this, sigma of n and t is equal to this. So you see, this one is already memorized, this one is memorized, and this one is memorized. And if I compute sigma of 2 and t, she computes, and now when I ask what is sigma, it is already in the list, that one. So it's improving and saving the values. Okay, great. So now we can compute the cusp anomalous dimension. So what do we do? We just compute 16 g squared, this sigma of t, and because there is this exponential of t minus 1, you see, we have to take as a limit, so we take limit when t goes to 0, and we expand this series, say, if you want. Sigma of what order? Max over 2. It's the number of iterations that we want, right? Because we want, because n, you see, is the order of iteration. It jumps by 2n, the order where it goes. So we want here max over 2 if we want to expand up to order max. And we make some series, and we can, for example, inside the series expand this time. And this is our result. And we can apply timing to see how much time it takes. It should take about 10 seconds. Okay, and my guess is that if I will now do this thing that I wanted to do, which I put some x here, and x goes to t, now there will be no error. Oh, this is very sad. Ah! Sorry, series. Series must have the argument max as an expansion. Sorry. So maybe this was okay. Okay, and let's see if it works. The result is here. So this, because I have x here. What have I done? T. Yeah, and this is the cusp anomalous dimension up to 5 loops, and it takes 0.1 seconds. Okay, if we have traditional form, we can have it in some nice way, and then we can open some paper and compare. Let me check if this is okay. Minus 88 over 45, 64 zeta 3. Okay, I missed some factor of 4. 4. Okay, these ones are wrong. Minus 4 g squared. 2GT, 2GT. Ah, it was probably here I forgot some 2GT. Could it be? Let's see. 8G squared, T prime prime. Sorry? No, I'm just... 1 second. Ah, no, it's okay. It's okay. 64. No, zeta 8. There's a factor of 2 here wrong. And here there's a factor of 3 wrong. What's going on? Let me try to find just 1 second a mistake if I don't find... So let's go to the kernels. I hope it's the kernels. So this. K0 is t times this minus t prime times this. And the other one, you exchange t prime and t. J0. I found a mistake. J1 of t. J0 of t prime, and then J0 of t, no, it's okay. J1 of t prime, the square, the difference of squares. There is this 2, t prime. I apologize. Mm-hmm. the first three match. So the problem is probably with KD. Let me put KD equal to 0. Sorry, I know a check that I can do, which is something funny. So let me put KD equal to 0 and run everything again. Okay, this takes 6 seconds. Tick, tick, tick. Yeah, there's something wrong. Could it be my... it was. There was something wrong in here. Okay, because this was not very safe to do, because this T here, I should first do it with some variable, which is not to be sure that it will not be T prime prime, and then I should do this integration. Because T prime prime, if I put here T prime prime, I get some mess with a kernel of the same argument. So I want to be sure that this T prime prime is not entering, what I put here is not the same as the integration variable. So first I put X, and then I replace X by T. And this is indeed a good result. So sorry about this. This replacement, I knew this replacement was important. Okay? So this is just a replacement because the integration variable cannot be the variable that I don't want to compute this at T prime prime. And then I don't want her to put T prime prime there. First, she computes with X and gives some result. Then, okay, she can put X to be T. Then at the end, she can replace it by T prime prime. There's no problem. But not at the very beginning, because otherwise T prime prime is an integration variable. Is it clear? So sorry about that. Okay, now it works. And this is a good result. And now I can remove the 0. And it works perfectly. And I have some nice comments to make about this. But since I lost some time, I think I will jump to the next application that I wanted to show. So this is the CASP anomalous dimension. We just computed it to 5 loops. We could come here and increase our max. Let's remove this stuff. We could increase our max and compute to 9 loops, and we would run. And 9 loops would probably take 15 seconds or something to compute. Where is it? Tuck, 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 here. And it's computing. And it should take about 10, 15 seconds. It took 12 seconds. And here is the result up to g to the 18. So you see just a bunch of zeta functions, a product of zeta functions, and this is the full result. So it starts as 8. Then there is pi squares, which is transcendentality 2. Then pi to the 4, which is transcendentality 4. Then pi to the 6, which is transcendentality 6. But also zeta 3 square, which is also 3 plus 3, transcendentality 6. And here, 8. 3 plus 5 is 8. 3 plus 3 plus 2 is also 8. And the transcendentality is fixed, the degree. It should be possible to just look at the equations and see that this ought to be the case. But I never thought about it. So, but it's a fact that the transcendentality of this equation is completely fixed by the order of perturbation theory. Okay, how much time do I have? No, I started a bit after 15. How much time do I have? Okay.
Okay, so another application that is sometimes useful, so let me have some extra topics, is to do numerical checks. I think we did not do, I think there is one numerical check which is very useful. When you are working with these symbols, as we saw in Christian's lecture, we get some identities from the symbols, but these are identities which are true up to lower transcendentality stuff. For example, if we are working with transcendentality 2 functions, then these identities are true up to pi squares, which we might want to fix. But that's very simple to fix numerically. So let's give an example based on Jake's lecture, so on Christian's lecture. So first, we have these variables, a of n, which were defined recursively. So a of n was 1 minus a of n minus 1 over a of n minus 2. This was a recursion relation, where a of 0 was some starting point, say alpha, and a of 1 was some starting point, a of 2 was some beta. Okay? So you define like this, and now you can memorize it if you want, a of n, to make it a bit faster. And but when you memorize it, you should always put some clear all in case you want to be sure. Okay, so this is our function a, so now we have a of 1, a of 2, but then a of 3 is this, a of 4 is this, a of 5 is this. The first thing we can check is we can apply this, say, to the first 20 values. And then we can simplify. And we see something nice. We see that there is this periodicity of 5 that Christian anticipated. Indeed, 5, the next 5 repeat. So we can see, do they really repeat? Let's ask for the first 5, 1 up to 5. Or let's ask also for the next to the last line, 6 up to 10. And indeed, you get exactly the same sequences. So it indeed generates a periodic sequence of 5. It's funny. And now the claim of Christian was that if you pick some polylogs, 2 of this A, of N, and if you sum this from N equal 1 up to 5, and if you sum this to the sum of log of A of N times log of A of N plus 1, again also from N up to 5, okay? You can now select and make it nicer by going to standard form, which I did by clicking Command-Shift-N. And the claim was that this sum was just 0 in the symbol sense. That is, it was just a constant, some pi square. Okay, so we compute this sum. Doesn't look very 0. We can try to ask Mathematica to full simplify, and she will, of course, fail, because it's not that easy to simplify polylogs. And then what we can do is replace alpha by some random number, replace beta by some random number, and then you see that you run several times and the number is always the same, so it doesn't really depend on alpha and beta, it's really just a constant. And okay, you want to find this constant, you know it's a multiple of pi square, you divide by pi square, and of course this constant is 1/2. Because you get here 0.5. You can rationalize, and this is perfectly 1/2. So this stuff, indeed, this is why I saw that it was not pi square over 6, but it was pi square over 2. This is nothing but pi square over 2. So if I divide by pi square over 2, I get 1. So this is quite useful to use this random, rationalize, and so on. Often, you can immediately find what you want. The last application I want, which was one of the exercises, which I find very cute, is how to make a deck of cards. It's also very useful when you are in boring talks. So also very useful for science. So, yes. If I had an ansatz for what that random could be, then yeah, I could use the same trick. And we do use a lot these kind of tricks, yeah. Yeah, very good, yeah. So, okay, so now the most important one, so how to make a deck of cards. So a deck of cards, you have the ace, and then we have the 2 up to 10, so we join the ace with the cards 2 up to 10. You see, this is new notation. We did not see this so far. It's a nice notation when you have a list. You have another list, and you can use this to join the two lists. I could also do join and then wrap the two, but this is cooler. It's nicer. It's easier to read. I have this list, and I join it with this list, and I join it with the other ones, which I always forget how they are called, jacks, queen, and king, right? And I have... join. And now I have my numbers. Okay? And now what I want is to apply, say, hearts to this list. And then I get hearts of ace, hearts of 2, hearts of 3, hearts of 4, and so on, up to hearts of king. But I don't want only to apply hearts. I want to apply hearts. I want to apply spades. So I want to apply something. And I will tell Mathematica later what this something is. So I put here this symbol. It's something. Let's see what this something is. So now we have a function that if I apply this to hearts, what will it give? It will pick these hearts, and it will put it here, and then it will apply hearts to everyone else. So it gives exactly the same. So we apply this to hearts, and we get exactly the same as just putting here hearts and then applying this to this. So why are we doing it in this stupid way? Well, because now we can apply this function not only to hearts, but to hearts, to spades, to clubs, and to diamonds. Diamonds. Now, instead of applying, we distribute. We apply to each of them. And now we have our deck. Okay, so if we now flatten, This is our deck. It starts with hearts, ace, two, three, four, and so on. Then after hearts comes spades, ace, two, and so on. Is it clear? Yes? Now, this is painful to read. No one wants to play cards like this. So we go here, palettes, writing assistant, and there's probably a faster way of getting there. Then you come here, you look for all special symbols. So it's very hidden in Mathematica. Probably they don't want you to do non-serious stuff. You go here at symbols, then you have some light bulb, which means brilliant ideas, and it's a brilliant idea to do a deck of cards. And here we have the nice symbols that we are looking for. So let's click them. Diamond, clubs, hearts, and spades. And now let's say that hearts, when she sees hearts, she should know that hearts is this nice symbol. And actually, we want it to be red. It's the color of love. So we ask it to be red and large. So, beautiful. And now, let's do the same for diamonds. 4 minutes is enough to do the deck, but not to play some poker. Then we do some diamonds. Then we do some spades. What have I done? Diamond, yeah, spades should be black. Good, so we remove the red. And this is spades, so we have this nice symbol here. And then we have clubs. By the way, this was one of the exercises, so I apologize for those who did this exercise. But hopefully I'm doing it in a slightly different way than what you did. So now we have all this. Now Mathematica knows how to represent this in a much nicer way. And if we have our deck, now it's much nicer. Now we really have a nice looking deck where we have all your cards. This. And this we can call this our deck. Now what we want to do with our deck? Well, we want to shuffle it. Otherwise, you don't play cards if the deck is not shuffled. So to shuffle, you do random sample. This is, of course, very useful, not only for decks, but also for other stuff. And you can apply this to your deck. And this shuffles the deck. Okay? So random sample, this is just shuffling this deck. Now, after shuffling, you don't want to see the cards, so you put a semicolon at the end. Otherwise, you are really not playing any game. But you do want Mathematica to know what is the deck. So you have to say that this is the shuffled deck, and this is the function shuffle. The function shuffle, delayed, shuffles the deck, but doesn't show you. So it's like, how is it called in the casinos? Carpier? Or something like that? It's our Carpier. We shuffled, but we don't see the deck. If we really want to see, we have to ask, what is the shuffled deck? And here it is. But let's shuffle again, because we saw what the cards were. Okay, good. So now we want to take some cards. So let's take n cards. So how do we take n cards? So we can make a block, and we say that what we are going to take is what? We take out of the shuffled deck the first n cards. This is our take. Then the shuffled card becomes the same. The shuffled deck becomes what it was before, but with less cards. We drop the first n cards of shuffled deck. Okay, so we drop it, and after dropping, we show what was take. Now we can take the first 7 cards, and we get, these are the first 7 cards. Then we take the next 7 cards, and these are the next 7 cards. And what is the remaining cards? The shuffled deck is, these are the remaining cards. Okay, so now we can play poker. So, and we can just ask to shuffle. And then we can do like this. We can say player 1, and then we can have here sequence applied to. This is just to make the output look nice. Of course, nothing, none of it. Take 2 cards. At least this is how it is in television. I'm not sure. And then for player 2, we take 2 more cards, and we show it in a nice table form. So these were the cards that they got. So, of course, player 2 is in advantage. Now there is this, we take 3 cards, and now player 1 is probably betting, but player 2 could still bluff. We take 1 more card, and we take 1 more card. So who do you bet? There is a 9. Yeah, so player 1 probably has some advantage. And there is a 5. Yeah, player 1 with 1 would win. Okay, so I think this is a useful time to stop. Except that maybe, okay, so that since this is being recorded, let's end with something serious, and since I have still two more minutes. So, but, yeah, okay. So there's something very curious, yet a bit mysterious, about this cusp anomalous dimension. The way we compute it is by solving these quantum bit equations, which encode the scattering of the magnons at any value of the coupling. One of the main ingredients of this computation is what is called the dressing factor. The dressing factor tells you what is the phase acquired by these two particles when you scatter one through each other. And the quantization of this phase is what gives the so-called bit equations. So this dressing factor, it's something that you find by solving crossing symmetry and by doing lots of sophisticated things. And we can ask ourselves, what happens to the result if we remove this dressing factor, which is a very complicated function? And this is quite surprising. That hints that maybe there is another derivation of the dressing factor, which is much more number theoretical, but which we don't have any clue about. So this was our result. You see, this is the result, shown here in traditional form. Let me have result 2, okay, be what we will have when we remove the dressing factor. Removing the dressing factor means that you remove the nasty kernel, the one that you had to integrate. So we put a 0 here, okay? We remove this one. And then we run everything without this complicated phase acquired by the particles when they scatter to each one through each other. So let's run everything again. Okay, we are running. And now she's saving it as result 2, which should take 12 seconds. It's roughly the same as before. And now we can compare both. Let's compare both. Result and result 2. So result starts here. 8g squared plus this, plus this, plus this. And, okay, this is hard to see. Let's make a table. Let's make a table where we pick the coefficient of g, and let's compare different powers of g. So coefficient of g, 2n. N runs from 1 to max over 2. Okay, so this compares. The first coefficient, 8, with and without dressing factor, the same. And so on. So let's make table form and traditional form. Okay, so we are going up to very high order. Let's go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, up to 6. Then here they are. And this is with dressing factor and without dressing factor. So what is the difference? Can someone tell me? Someone who doesn't know the answer, of course. Who did not know the answer before this lecture. Sorry? Yes. The only difference, if you see, is that the terms which have zeta of odd arguments, because pi squares are zetas of even arguments, but the ones that have zetas of odd arguments, they have the wrong sign. Indeed, if you ask, what is the result? And if you subtract to the result without dressing factor, just replacing the odd zeta functions, which are the ones that appear, by I times the odd zeta functions, you get precisely zero. So all the dressing factor, all this complicated scattering of the magnons which you find by solving crossing and unitarity and so on, which is something complicated that Rommel Dyanik did, for example. He wrote his crossing equation and other people solved. It's a very interesting story. All this dressing factor does is, in the cusp anomalous dimension, whenever you see a zeta function, replace it by I times zeta function. Even more, it's even stronger. If you ask yourself, what is the dressing factor? Okay, once you make some ansatz, which you can derive alternative from other sources. But roughly, when you ask yourself, what is the dressing factor? If you say, I want a dressing factor which has this property, the property of flipping just the odd zeta functions, that determines uniquely the dressing factor. So it seemed like the sole role of the dressing factor is to flip some i's in the zeta functions of the cusp anomalous dimension. Of course, no one has any clue why this is true. Thank you.